from runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 117 with guest Phil Peary, recorded Thursday, July 2nd, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
How you doing?
I'm well, and it's been a while since we got together. I know for the listeners, it's just been a steady stream of shows, but we got ahead of the game for a while there, didn't we?
That's right. We tend to do these things in waves as best we can.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, I think a month went by. We didn't have to record any shows, so I feel like I missed you, buddy.
Yeah, I miss you too. You know, that's it. We're not doing our regular, at least, you know, pretty regular set of recordings and calls. So for people that don't know, we'll try to schedule guests in blocks because, it's really the best way to produce the best shows, right?
Absolutely.
And it works out really well that way from a planning perspective. And then we just release the shows every Wednesday.
And so now the coffers are empty and it's time to fill them back up again.
That's right. So here we go.
Yeah, let me introduce our guest. Phil Peary is a member of the Microsoft Field Engineering Group in the New York metro area and has been with the company for 5.5 years. Phil is an Active Directory Windows Platform and Performance Engineer and provides Microsoft customers with services such as ADRAPs and teaches a number of workshops, including the Active Directory Troubleshooting and Windows 2008 Networking. Passionate about delivering the message on 64-bit Windows and Windows 2008, Phil has been instrumental in driving the development of Windows 2008 Chalk Talks, delivering the talks to many customers in the New York area, showing the value and the new features of the 2008 platform. Welcome, Phil.
Thanks, guys.
Howdy.
How you doing?
What's a ADRAP or ADRAP or however, how do you say that? What is that?
Pronounced ADRAP. ADRAP stands for Active Directory Risk Assessment Program, and it's essentially a service that we deliver to our customers. It's a detailed analysis of a deployed running Active Directory, checking how it conforms to best practices, things like that.
Cool.
Really? Now, I had not heard of that before, but we're going to have to talk about that sometime in the future. That sounds pretty darn interesting.
Speaking of shows, that's a show. I'd like to know more about that as well, because today's show, I think we want to focus on this whole 32-bit versus 64-bit operating systems, right?
Okay. Yep, absolutely.
And so question number one is, should I be running anything other than 64-bit? Isn't 64-bit the way?
Well, listen, my personal opinion is 64-bit is here. It's been here for a while, right? Any new machine that you buy from, whether it be an Intel processor or an AMD processor, is 64-bit now, right?
Right.
Intel
and
AMD don't even make 32-bit processors anymore. So from the perspective of, what you run, it's there, right? And there are substantial performance gains from 32-bit to the 64-bit space. So
just by running the other operating system, we're going to get a substantial gain?
Sure. Yeah, if you deploy a 32-bit version of Windows, whether it be 2003 or 2008, hopefully it's 2008, right?
Right.
On a machine that is 64-bit capable, and you take that same machine and you deploy the 64-bit version of the operating system with 64-bit drivers and, full support for the 64-bit OS,
right,
performance will be definitely on the order of 30 to 40% better than what you get from the 32-bit version of the OS.
So can you explain in layman's English, just sort of think of me as a really below average guy and explain to me why is that true? What are the real world reasons? Where do I really see the performance increases and where is it maybe kind of the same?
Well, so from the perspective of just the way the operating systems are designed, so a 32-bit OS basically deals with information in 32-bit kind of bunches, right?
Right.
It's what the processor is designed to handle and the way the operating system is compiled to run. Okay, when you move from 32 bits to 64 bits, the code of the operating system, as long as it's fully 64-bit capable, right, because you can run 32-bit applications on a 64-bit Windows box. But as long as everything is 64 bits across the board, basically you're able to process twice the processor word data at any given clock cycle. So right from just the change from 32-bit to 64-bit hardware, you automatically are getting a larger amount of data that you can execute at any given time. From the perspective of memory, and this is really, in my opinion, it's probably where you gain the biggest bang for the buck, is with Windows 32-bit, you basically have a 4-gig cap in the amount of addressable memory space that you have, right?
Right.
If you, you know, 2 bits to the 32nd power, you know, fuzzy math, you know, that's roughly, 4096, right? 4 gig, right? With 64 bits, right? The theoretical memory space is 16 exabytes. I mean, it's huge, right? Now, you show me a machine that supports that much physical memory, and, you know, I have a bridge that I can sell you in Brooklyn, but, you know, they just don't right. exist yet. But from the perspective of the virtualized memory space and what you have available to you there, the differences are huge. For example, in 32-bit Windows, we basically divide the memory space up into two chunks, right? From 0 to 2 gig is kernel space. That's private to the operating system, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we have the page pool and the non-page pool memory pools that the operating system manages. From 2 gig to 4 gig is user mode memory space, right? This is where applications execute. You know, this is where your Notepad runs, where right. SQL Server runs, where Active Directory runs. When you go from 32 bits to 64 bit, that processor address space jumps from 2 gigabytes to 8 terabytes.
Slight difference
so,
there.
So it's a huge amount of processing room for processes to run in. Okay, so specifically from just from the memory perspective, you've got this huge amount of address space that you can now run your processes in.
If you throw the hardware at it, then you have that capability.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, right? You have to have a machine that supports that much physical memory.
Sure.
I think right now, you know, you could get, you know, machines with, hundreds and hundreds of gigabytes, but nobody's producing a box that has, you know, that 16 exabyte
sure.
you know, memory in it. You know, it would just be too, you know, too expensive, I suppose.
But in the real world, like, you know, what you might think of is, I don't know, what maybe you could call it a commodity level server in today's
right.
day and age, that if you had 16 gigs or 32 gigs of RAM in it, it sounds like you're going to be able to do a lot more with a 64-bit architecture than you can with a 32-bit architecture.
Absolutely. Case in point, an Active Directory domain controller, okay?
Okay.
In Active Directory, the main process that makes a domain controller is lsas.exe, right? This
right.
is the process that is responsible for handling network requests to the database. It also caches the database into memory. It basically is managing Active Directory for you. In 32-bit Windows, if you use the standard memory model, right, where you're 2 gig and 2 gig, 2 gig for kernel, 2 gig for user mode, that basically means that the most LSAS can cache into memory at any one point is about a gig and a half or so of Active Directory data. If your Active Directory database is bigger than a gig and a half, that
yeah.
means to satisfy any LDAP lookup request, you're going to disk, which, as we know, is way slower than if the data is cached in memory. Right?
Sure, sure.
So if you take that same environment and you put it on a 64-bit machine and you have lots and lots of physical memory available to get that Active Directory database cached into memory, Active Directory performance is greatly enhanced by that, right?
Interesting.
And we do have customers. We have a lot of customers that actually run with really big Active Directory databases on 32-bit hardware, and it is a performance issue.
So, I mean, I imagine there's a lot of variables that go into, you know, how many users slash groups or how many objects are in your directory. But is there sort of like a, maybe just a big paintbrush kind of number that says, you know, if your organization is larger than X, then chances are you're going to benefit from doing this? I mean, well, would you have just a generic number?
Ultimately, it comes down to how big physically the LDAP database is, the ntds.dit file, right? Now, there, like you said, there are some variables there. Generally, if you boot your domain controllers without a switch called 3GB, which we'll talk about in a minute,
okay,
so that you have a 2GB user mode addressable memory space, you can cache, the LSAS process can cache up to about 1.4 or so gig of Active Directory data into memory. And right, the reason why it can't go to the full 2GB is because the process has to have a little bit of headroom to actually process requests. So it's going to use a little bit of that remaining sure memory to actively process LDAP requests, right? Now, what you can do in some cases is you can use the 3GB switch on a domain controller with some caveats that basically what 3GB does is it takes that 4GB address space and it divides it a little differently. Basically what happens is you add 3GB to your boot.ini and the kernel memory space is, which is normally 2GB, is reduced to 1GB. So the kernel has to squeeze into a gig of memory. Okay.
Okay.
That extra gig of RAM is given to user mode processing. And of course, LSAS, Active Directory, is a user mode process, right? So we can now give LSAS a little more headroom to cache data into, right? Now, we actually only recommend you do this under certain circumstances, right? And the circumstances are if you have a full physical 4GB of memory in the domain controller, and if your Active Directory database is bigger than a gig and a half. And at that point, if you decide to throw that switch and you meet that criteria, if you decide to put that switch in boot.ini, mm-hmm, you basically are allowing LSAS to cache up to about 2.5GB of Active Directory database, right? Now, what do you do? So here's the negative effect to using that 3GB switch, right? Because there is a bit of a performance implication. When we reduce the kernel size down to a gig, one of the things that happens is the page pool and the non-page pool caches, which are memory caches that are in the kernel address space, are mm-hmm cut by about half. Okay,
sure.
Within the kernel, there is a thing called a page table. Okay, the page table contains page table entries. Basically, what a page table entry does is it tracks every process that has a memory allocation that's currently active and what that address space is. Right, the physical hexadecimal address of the memory, right, for that given process, so that we know who's got what in memory, right? And the reason why we have to do that is, let's say you fire up Notepad and you're going to go down to the local computer store and you're going to buy some memory and a hard drive, right? So you're typing up your shopping list, right? As soon as Notepad fires up, he requests memory from the memory manager in order to store his process private data, your
sure
shopping list, right?
Right.
When he does that request, a page table entry is created with the physical address of that page of memory that is being allocated to Notepad. Okay? So Notepad knows where his memory is, knows where his data is as a function of the page table entry. Let's say you type away, and then you stop and you take a break and you go out to lunch or what have you. After a period of time, there's a process called the working set trimmer that is keeping track, and this is a component of the memory manager, that is keeping track of what every process is doing in regard to accessing their active data, right? Those pages of memory.
Mm-hmm.
If the Notepad process stops actively accessing a page of memory for a given period of time, I believe it's about 10 minutes or so, what'll happen is the memory manager will say, hey, Notepad, you're not using that memory right now. The LSAS process needs that memory to cache Active Directory database into memory. I'm going to take that memory away from you, and I'm going to put your data on the page file. Okay?
Gotcha.
Actually, first it goes to something called the modified list, right? The modified list is another area in memory that if you come back to Notepad after this operation happens and we move to the modified list, we don't have to go all the way out to the page file to retrieve the data. It's a little bit faster. What happens is we move that data to the modified list and we update the page table entry to reflect that the data is no longer in main memory for that process, right? We have to keep track of where the data is, right? Once it sits in the modified list for a period of time and isn't asked for again or isn't touched, then it goes out to the page file. When it goes out to the page file, we again update the page table entry for Notepad and we say this data is now on the page file, right? You come back from lunch and you start typing away on your shopping list again, right? You're going to add a laser printer or something to your shopping list. And Notepad goes to access that page of memory and it's gone. It's no longer there. He goes, hey, memory manager, where's my data? The memory manager goes to the page table entry list and says, wait a minute, Notepad, your data's out in the page file. Let me go retrieve it for you. The memory manager goes, retrieves that page of data, puts it back into memory, probably in a different physical location, updates the page table entry, tells Notepad, hey, your data is here now, dismisses the exception that Notepad sent to the memory manager, and Notepad's able to continue on his merry way using that data. Now, here's why I go through this lengthy description of this, right? Just by that description, you can see how important a page table entry is to the normal operation of a Windows machine, right? It's a critical part of the memory management of Windows, right? What happens is when you throw that 3GB switch, whether it be on a workstation or a domain controller or a SQL server or what have you, what happens is, like I said, the kernel memory gets reduced down to a gig. When we reduce that kernel memory down to a gig, we cut our non-page and our page pool memory pools approximately in half. The data structure that holds our page table doesn't get reduced by half. It actually gets reduced much more aggressively, something on the order of like four times more aggressively. So what happens is if you have a Windows machine that boots and doesn't run anything with 2 gig of RAM in it or 4 gig of RAM in it, you may have up to 200,000 free page table entries when that machine boots, right? That same machine with 3GB may start with only 40,000 page table entries. And page table entries are part of every memory allocation. Now, what happens is if you go below 10,000 free page table entries, you're kind of getting into that warning zone, right? You're like that center fielder who's running to catch a fly ball. And instead of, you know, keeping your eye on the center field fence, you're watching the ball coming at you, right? If you go below 8,000 free page table entries, your right foot has just hit the warning track in center field. If you go below 6,000 free page table entries, you've just run into the center field wall, right? And basically, you're out of a critical memory resource on that machine.
Right.
And what we typically see is when you have page table exhaustion, what we see is we see operating system instability, and sometimes the machine will just hang, right? This is one of the reasons why when you are looking at 3GB, when I go to customers that are considering implementing it or have already implemented it, I always make sure that they have some kind of instrumentation on that machine that's monitoring their free page table entries, because it's critical for that reason. Now, when you get to a 64-bit box, page table entries, you know, for the page table entry address space, you have a 128 gig available to you. So it's very simply no longer an issue.
Right. So 64-bit architecture and the 64-bit version of Windows running that really solves all the problems that we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, right?
Exactly. And to be quite honest with you, the whole 3GB methodology, because of the huge address space in 64-bit Windows, simply doesn't exist. You don't have to do it because you've got all this memory.
Phil, the question I have here is, this is only going to work if I have more memory. If I take exactly the same hardware, both with 4 gigs of RAM, run 32-bit versus 64-bit, aren't I going to have problems with 64-bit just because the pointers are all bigger and I don't have any more memory to play with?
Good question. Basically, bear in mind that Windows is a demand page virtual memory operating system. Okay, so when you boot a Windows box, he thinks a Windows 32-bit box, whether or not you have 256 meg of memory in it or 4 gig of memory in it, is going to think that virtually it has 4 gig of memory in it.
Right.
Same concept applies with 64-bit Windows. Okay. We think we have that whole address space, and because the address space is virtualized, and by using the page file, we can make applications think that they have an 8-terabyte process address space, right? So any given process that's 64 bits is going to think it's got that 8 terabytes of memory available. And depending on what it needs to do from a processing perspective, it may, you know, the address ranges are going to all be virtualized, and there will be a little bit of paging going on potentially, right? Speaking of the page file, one of the things that is also important is the more memory you give a Windows machine, whether it be 32-bit or 64-bit, the smaller a page file you really technically need.
Right.
Right? Because if you can get all of your data into physical memory and all your processes into physical memory,
nothing to page.
Yeah. Nothing has to page out. Right. And what goes to the page file anyway? Process data. Right. Going back to our notepad example, right? If you're typing away and you have to swap that data out to the page file, does notepad.exe get paged out? No, it doesn't, because it's already on disk, right? In the form of the exe. So we don't actually have to page out executables and DLLs. We only page out, process private data when it needs to be on demand, right?
Makes sense.
So hopefully that answers your 32-bit versus 64-bit question in regard to memory and with machines that have the same amount of physical RAM.
And obviously the thing to do as soon as you go to 64-bit is add more memory, but I'm just concerned that I'm not going to get much benefit if I don't add more memory.
Exactly. There will be a benefit to it from a performance perspective.
Right.
One of the things with Windows is it always runs better with more memory when you give it. That's true with 32-bit. It's true with 64-bit.
Sure.
Absolutely.
The 3BG switch worries me because once you get that pool down to 40,000 and you know that 10,000 is a threshold, that means that, you know, at the 25% mark, you're in trouble already. That just seems like such a small number.
Yes.
In what cases is this switch actually a good idea? Because if I have a program that's using that much memory, it's probably using an awful lot of handles as well.
True. So there are some circumstances that it can be of benefit. For example, we talked a little bit about the Active Directory database size, right? So if your database is physically between 1.4 and 2.5 gig, and that machine is only a domain controller. In other words, it's not, you know, wearing multiple hats. It's not doing double and triple duty. Then, and you have 4 physical gig of memory in it for a 32-bit domain controller. Yeah, it can be helpful,
right?
Because our idea is to cache as much of the Active Directory database into physical memory as possible, right? That's the way we ensure the fastest access to LDAP, right? If you are less than 1.4 gig, then 3GB is of no real value to you. If your database is bigger than 2.5 gig, then your answer is a 64-bit domain.
Right.
Right.
So take a look at the file, and that'll give you an idea.
One of the things that I do like to recommend, and I think I mentioned this once before, is if you do choose to throw the 3GB switch, make sure that you're doing some monitoring of that available free page table entry counter in Perfmon, because you do have to keep an eye on it, right? One of the things I did some benchmarking for one of our customers specifically on this topic, and we had a 4 gig machine. We threw 3GB in it, and one of the things we did was we monitored different processes, and when their system state backups kicked off, we observed approximately 18,000 page table entries get consumed by the NT backup process.
Ouch.
Like that. Yeah, because what's the backup process doing? It's caching stuff into memory to go either to a tape or to a backup file.
Right.
It's allocating a lot of memory. And boom, sure. it ate up the page table entry list. So you do have to be cognizant of that particular counter. Some other things that may benefit from 3GB is Exchange servers love that extra gig of memory.
Right.
So do SQL servers, right? If you want to slow down your Windows XP or Windows Vista workstation, you can certainly put 3GB on those operating systems.
Yeah, I've tried
but
that.
It's not going to buy you much.
No.
You know.
But it strikes me that this switch makes sense on single-purpose machines, because more programs running is going to eat up handles really quickly.
Correct.
And they said tightly monitored servers. So that it's just doing Active Directory. It's just doing Exchange. But as soon as I talk about Exchange or SQL Server, I think the answer is 64-bit and 8 gigs of RAM at a minimum.
Exactly.
Well, and with you have to with Exchange now, right?
Actually, the new version of Exchange is 64-bit only, I believe, right?
Right.
Well, not being an Exchange guy, I believe there's a 32-bit version for testing purposes, but the production version, I believe, is 64-bit. SQL Server, I think we still do both 64 and 32-bit. But I agree 100%. If you're running a SQL box, if you're running an Exchange box, and if you're running an Active Directory domain controller, I always like to recommend 64-bit. Not only because of the memory benefits, but also remember all of our I/O drivers, network and disk drivers, are now 64-bit as well. So they also perform much better than their 32-bit counterparts as well. So along with getting the big memory space and the larger processor capability, the ability to process twice the processor word data at one clock cycle, you also get greatly improved disk and network I/O. So there's wins almost all the way around here.
There's another side to this driver problem. I mean, one of the things is sometimes companies don't have 64-bit drivers.
Exactly. But yeah, and for 64-bit Windows, the drivers have to be 64-bit digitally signed in order to be able to be installed.
Right. I have found that generally when they do have 64-bit drivers, they're pretty good quality because they do have to go through the signing process.
That is correct. Yeah. That definitely allows us to make sure that there's no memory leaks, that the drivers are compiled correctly, all that.
Yeah, it's an interesting advantage in that respect. But like I said, all the hardware runs 64-bit these days. The question is, I think people get confused around whether 32-bit apps run well on 64-bit OSs or not. What's your experience been? I mean, obviously, Active Directory, if you're in 64-bit, it just runs in 64-bit.
But that's correct.
If you've got custom-built apps, the stuff that's built in .NET and so forth, how well does it behave running on the 64-bit OS?
Well, of course, it's always going to be an application-by-application evaluation, right? You do have to do a little bit of testing first.
Right.
But my experience, both on my home network and out in the field with customers, is that most 32-bit applications run very well with little or minor modifications, to run properly on a 64-bit version of the OS. Performance is, greatly enhanced. Now, there is the, whole 64-bit to 32-bit, thunking process where when we run a 32-bit application, we do have to do the, memory address space emulation.
Right. They call it Windows on Windows.
Exactly. And, the initial startup of the application might be impacted a little bit. But it's still, in most cases, I found that most 32-bit applications run pretty well.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed, I'm throwing my developer hat on right now, in the .NET world, is that the default configuration for compiling a .NET app is marked as compile any, which basically says, if you're running on a 64-bit OS, run in 64-bit mode. If you're running a 32-bit, run in a 32-bit, which is very compatible.
Right.
But often we haven't done any testing in 64-bit mode. And so when you do that, stuff can break. And the minor modification to make is just to set the app to say, always run as 32-bit. I don't care what operating system you're running on. Then our testing is all valid, and it runs in Windows and Windows mode, and you don't have any compatibility problems that way.
Right. The Windows on Windows process does a pretty good job of making sure that those 32-bit apps run well.
Absolutely. And the main thing is just making sure you know you're running a 32-bit rather than running a 64-bit. To me, it seems silly to run in 64-bit mode if you're not going to address large chunks of memory. If the 32-bit space, if that 4 gig space is enough, make it a 32-bit app.
Absolutely.
And, of course, that means, you know, talking to developers about it. But just between us IT pros, it's a property setting and then a recompile. It's a five-second fix.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about low-hanging things that just decrease grief. That's a good one.
Sure. Absolutely. And the, you know, there's been a lot of work in ensuring that compatibility is there, right? And it is, it's solid. It's solid. It works. I've never had a 32-bit application fail on my 64-bit OSs, and I run a lot of odd 32-bit applications on a couple of my 64-bit machines in my home lab, so never had a problem.
And is there any question that we should always run all our Hyper-V machines as 64-bit?
Well, basically, if you're running Hyper-V on 2008, that's your option. Right? Yeah, that's your only option, right? You've got to run the Hyper-V service. It has to run on a 64-bit machine. Won't run on 32 bits. You can run a 32-bit guest OS, but the Hyper-V box itself, the host machine, has to be 64-bit.
Right. All right, Phil, any final words? We're about out of time.
No, I enjoyed talking to you guys. The one thing I'd like to say is... to all your listeners, is kick the tires. 64-bit is here. It's good stuff. One of the things, if you want to do, contact your Microsoft TAM to have a PFE come in and, you know, maybe do a demo.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what we're here for.
You bet.
We're here to help.
Phil Peery, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.